Powered from the Perdomo Cigar Studios on the Red Stage in Indian Trail, North Carolina, and broadcasting down under outside Brisbane, Australia, it's episode 19 of Primetime Jukebox. Tonight, Dave and I take a look at some of our favorite live music records. And as always, Primetime Jukebox is sponsored by Perdomo Cigars, awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014 by Cigar Journal. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary brand has consistently earned the highest scores in the industry and is a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers: a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut shade, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan sun-grown, and a dark, oily Cuban seed Nicaraguan Maduro. Combining these beautifully bourbon-valorized wrappers with thick, high-priming binder and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with rich flavors and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigars is a family-owned and operated company headquartered in Miami, Florida, with manufacturing and agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar brands include the Perdomo Estate Selección Vintage, the Perdomo Double Age 12-Year Vintage, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary, Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary, Perdomo Abano Bourbon Barrel Age, Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And by Drew Estate, check out and download the Drew Estate app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. It's available on iTunes and Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And as always, all the live streaming for the Primetime Network of shows is sponsored by Drew Estate, as well as the California studios for the Primetime show. Welcome, everybody. This is Primetime Jukebox episode 19. This is a late September edition of Jukebox as we head into the fall months here, and where we have, you know, starting to get the change of seasons in both areas. This is Will Cooper. I am on the Red Stage here in the Palatial Perdomo Cigar Studios. I'm joined by my friend and colleague down under in Australia, Mr. Dave Burke.
Hello, Coop. Hello, everybody.
It seems like a while since we did a show. It seems like it's forever.
It has been. I think because we did like beginning of the month and end of the month this time, and usually we're like
every other week,
closer together.
Yeah. So it was a little longer, and I was mentioning the change in seasons, you know, so it's kind of different for us compared to you, because you guys are getting warmer weather and we're getting cooler weather.
That's right. We're moving into summer.
Right.
It's not quite summer yet. Like, it'll get to like 80 something during the day, and then 50 something at night. So
is this spring for you? They call this
spring?
They actually call
this spring? I mean, usually the seasons, really, where I'm at, it's sort of like hot and not hot, really.
Right.
So it'll be like this for maybe a couple of weeks, and then it'll be like, you know, 95 and
okay
the day and stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, in Charlotte, where I'm in the south part of the state, so it still stays pretty warm into mid to late October. But what you do see happen here is the nights get cooler.
Yeah.
So there's bigger temperature differentials you have as you head into the winter months. And the winter months can be kind of crazy here, where it's not unusual to see a 30-degree drop some nights.
All right.
Yeah, so it kind of is it's – when I lived in New York, it wasn't quite as extreme. You know, you didn't have quite you had more cooling overall throughout the day, but especially when you're away from the coast, you see bigger temperature differentials.
Yeah, no, it's warming up, which is always nice.
You know, the other thing that's weird is, I'll just say this about Charlotte, like every hurricane that hits the East Coast, the rains find their way to North Carolina one way or another.
All right, yeah, right.
So there was just some tropical storm that hit the Gulf, and the rain came through here yesterday, and it's lingering today. We get every one of these remnants kind of always find their way to North Carolina.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that then.
Yep.
No, otherwise, for those of you tracking Coop's package of cigars.
Yes, we have an update.
It has made it to Perth. It's been in Perth, which is the west coast of Australia. And I'm on the east coast. So it's been in Perth for, what do you reckon now, Coop, like 2-3 weeks or something?
I want to say right after we did the episode 18, we were talking about it in Hong Kong, and you were wondering if it was going to go to Perth.
Kong, yeah.
And then, I think right after that show aired, it went to Perth.
So those of you that are betting on when it gets here,
I'm getting worried. We have some important shows we need to do with that.
If you picked October, you're looking good.
Dave told me, he's like, you got to get – he's like, Coop, you got to get these out. I'm getting worried. I'm like, okay. And I did procrastinate. I'm like, all right, I got to get these out. And I never thought it would be this long.
Coop was like, what is that? Don't be ridiculous.
Yeah.
You're worrying too much. It'll get there.
Yeah, but boy. And I guess geography-wise, you can kind of correct me. Like, you're on the East Coast, right? Perth is on the West Coast. It's like almost 3,000 miles away.
It's the same. I mean, Australia's pretty much the same landmass as the States. So it's sort of like, California from you, essentially.
So, these things went, like, we flew them west, right? They get to Hong Kong, another 3,000 miles west to Australia.
I don't know.
I have not, like I said, there's changes that have happened in the routes, the shipping routes, clearly from the U.S.
Well, I was talking before, and this is a lot of inside Australian cigar talk, but usually everything goes through Sydney, and it doesn't take, it still takes a bit, but as soon as it hits Sydney, usually within a week, if it's in customs, I'll get a declaration, or it'll get here if it misses customs.
Yeah.
So I'll either get the declaration in a week once it hits Sydney, or I'll get the cigars. I've never had anything go through Perth, so this is a new thing for me.
Yeah. But it's been sitting there, so I don't know. Anyone from Australian Customs is on this, listening to this program, please help us out.
Yeah, send that, because once I get the declaration, I pay it, and then I got to wait for them to get it, and then they release it, and it still has to get here. So I reckon another 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
Is my guess.
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
But that leads into our cigars we're smoking, because a lot of my stuff from America is being held up. I got this cigar here.
Yeah. So we're smoking from the Fratello Camo series, the Fratello Rosso. So I'll give a little background on this series if people aren't familiar with it. Omar De Frias owns Fratello Cigars. They've been around for about 7 years now. Up-and-coming brand. Small company. Omar used to be an employee for NASA. And he left NASA to go, he actually was working at NASA for a while he had the cigar company, and then he left NASA to do this full time. One thing he didn't have, like a lot of cigar companies, for folks who may not be, or the music people not be familiar with cigars, is there's different cigars, like just like there's different levels of wine. So, you have some very expensive cigars and you have some very inexpensive cigars. Omar really didn't have that inexpensive cigar. And Fratello Rosso is a cigar that sells for $3.25. So it's a very inexpensive cigar. But earlier this year he announced the Fratello Camo series, which is three of these like value price cigars, we'll call them. We're smoking the Fratello Rosso, which has a Habano wrapper. There's the Fratello Blue, which is the Maduro, and then there's the Fratello Verde, which means green, and that is the Connecticut shade. These are mixed and short fillers in there. So they, in cigar factories, most of the premium cigars that we talk about are long filler, like the whole leaves there. But what happens is when they make these cigars, there's scraps that get left over, and nothing gets wasted in a cigar factory. So they're able to put together these cigars with the shorter fillers. That doesn't mean this is a bad cigar, okay? Because the tobaccos are still the same good tobaccos that you get. And Omar's making these out of the La Aurora factory in the Dominican Republic. And when I was down at Pro Cigar in February, I was at the La Aurora factory, right? And I'm kind of walking around, and who do I see? I see Omar working with Manuel Anoa, the master blender. Omar is like knee deep into blending with him. I could just say he just seemed I didn't even bug him, right? But he was like, so he works with La Aurora with several of his other lines. He works between La Aurora and Hoya de Nicaragua. And you know what the connection is with those two?
No.
So it's two connections. La Aurora is the oldest factory in the Dominican Republic. Hoya de Nicaragua is the oldest factory in Nicaragua. And Jose Blanco worked at both
companies. Oh, yeah.
And that's how Jose got Omar, like gave Omar a start a lot with the first Fratello line in Hoya de Nicaragua.
All right.
Yeah. So I have not, you smoked this. I have not smoked it yet.
Yeah.
It's, like I said, I can, when I cut it, I did get a little bit of what my old broadcast partner, Stogie Sandy, used to call Scooby Snacks.
Yeah.
But I knew that ahead of time. But it's got a nice start. It's starting out nice. It's not a heavy cigar by any means.
No.
I would put it probably on the low side of medium.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to, as you're just talking about that, I'm just trying to think of other short filled. Is Papas Fritas, is that a short filler?
Papas Fritas and Nasty Fritas are both short filler.
Right.
Cigars, and both are very good.
Yep.
Liga Privada pieces.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like you're saying, like, if you're taking the pieces from an amazing cigar, like, you're going to still come up with something, you know.
Yeah, Steve Saka did it with the Pulpetta, the event cigar.
Yes. Yep.
That's coming from, I think that's the leftover tobaccos from the Mi Carita in the Umbagogs. If you're familiar with J.C. Newman, the Quorum is one of their best-selling cigars.
Yeah.
That comes out of Nicaragua, and that's using their stuff. Drew Estate also introduced the Factory Smokes line.
Factory, yep.
Which is like a $2 price point. And they have it in various different wrapper options as well. And I had one more at the top of my head, and I can't remember. Oh, General launched a brand called Odyssey this year.
Yep.
Last year, which, again, it's kind of in that Quorum, this Camo series, short filler stuff. There's a market for these.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You know, my son worked at the retail store. He said Quorum was the best-selling brand.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, I had one before, and I'm smoking the Robusto, so it might be different than yours.
Yeah, I got the Toro.
But I mean, I like it. I mean, right off the bat, I'm getting a lot of sweetness off it.
Yeah, there's a nice Habano sweetness. I get a little bit of wood in here.
Yep, there's a little. I had a little bit of spice. It's sort of tailing off.
I got a little spice. I'm in the open. You're probably a little ahead of me, but yeah, I got a little spice on here.
I mean, the burn. Oh, sorry. I mean, it's a bit flaky, but that you expect that, I guess. I mean, I mean, the construction I think is pretty good for like a short filled $3 cigar or whatever.
Look, a roller's still got to be able to roll this stuff up and make it smokable.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Long fillers, I guess, just bring a better smoking experience overall.
So, would the wrapper for this coupe just be like a seconds wrapper, like a wrapper they use on something else that doesn't meet the standard or something?
Yeah, and usually it's not that the wrapper is damaged or anything. It doesn't usually look as pretty.
Could be its color.
It's color. Yeah, it could even just be a color that's off from the rest of the line, or it just could be like aesthetically not as pretty looking.
But I mean, I'll put it this way. I was talking about this with Coop before the show. This cigar for me is like the Fast and Furious movies, right? Like when I go to the Fast and Furious movie, I'm not expecting like some Oscar nominated, you know, I know what I'm getting. And that's fine. I mean, the cigar for what it is, I think it's really good.
This is starting off nice for me. I got my burn a little wonky like yours.
Yeah.
So I'm getting a little bit of that kind of hole kind of going. We'll see. Yeah, that's touch upable though. I'm not kind of ready to throw this under the bus, but there's a market, like I said, for these cigars. And you know, again, you always got to look at the raw materials. This is coming from a very good factory, La Aurora, which gets very good tobacco.
Mm.
They don't grow their tobacco. They purchase it.
Mm. I mean.
Yeah.
For Omar to put his name on it, he's not going to want to put something out there that's trash just to sell it. Like,
no, especially a guy like Omar, who's a small guy. You know, you got to remember, he doesn't have a lot of SKUs, one bad line he puts out could kill him.
Yeah.
I mean, really could.
But, I mean, I'm comparing this to his, like, the Discovery, like, the line he did that was sort of paying homage to kind of NASA and stuff.
The Navetta. Yep.
Yeah. So he had some of that, which I really like that line. And, I mean, I guess what you'll miss in this type of cigar is it's fairly one note. It doesn't have a ton of complexity.
No.
I think that the final third is a bit rough.
Well, that's what happens with short fillers is that final third is always the part. But there is some sweetness I'm getting out of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, you get what, like you said, like a 4 or 5 pack is $15.
Right.
Like, just throw it in, have it every now and then. We just want a cigar and sit out and that's good. I mean, as long as you're like, I'm not expecting, you know, like a Davidoff Nicaragua or something. Like, I mean, you know what you're getting.
This is smoked better than some of those TAA cigars.
I mean, I tell you, I'll say this to Coop too. Like, this smokes better than a lot of the, you know, some of the stuff I've had from my father that I didn't really like.
Oh, shots fired.
But That's how, I mean, like I tell Coop, you get a $12, $15 cigar that, like, isn't good.
No, it's totally. I've had cigars $20 that are not as good. Is this going to be a 90 rated cigar on Coop? I don't know. I haven't smoked enough of it, right? So it's unfair. But no, if it didn't get a 90, it's still a good cigar. Like, that's what I would look at with that. You know,
and it's hard too to put it up against long filled, you know, premium cigars as well.
It really is. It really is. It's but here's the thing, and we've gotten into this. Aaron and I have talked a lot about this. We feel they have to be scored the same way.
Yeah.
We can't make a separate set of scoring criteria.
And how do you compare it?
So these are going to come out on lower scores. But are you going to pay – look, if you're paying $3.25 for a cigar that may get – and I don't know what this gig. I'm going to throw an 85 out there, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot different than if you're paying $14 and the cigar scores an 87.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So then there's a big difference. You know, you go, that's where the value point comes in where, you know, okay, it's an 85, but for $3.25, I'll buy a few of these. You know, I can buy these. I don't have to think much about the cigar
and get
some enjoyment from it. And yeah. I've heard Omar comment and he recognized that he's not expecting this to be his top of the line cigar.
But, I mean, the one thing, and I think is probably what Omar is after, like, it's definitely a cigar I would get more of. And it's definitely a cigar that has me interested in the other ones in the line.
Yeah, I agree. I have some of the blue in the Verdes I could send in the next shipment. Maybe you'll have them before Christmas, but yeah.
That's right. But it has me interested in what the other ones are like. You know, whereas if it was like just trash, I wouldn't really, you know.
I agree. You know, the other thing that we came up with, and I'm going to share my screen. So
there you go. Share it up.
I think there's something important to see here. So I'm going to show the packaging on the bundle here, because I think that is important when you're looking at these cigars. And I'll explain why I like the packaging, what he did. On this, because the problem is these are sold in bundles, right? But I like what he did with the bundles is he actually made it so you could actually see the cigars in there. I'm very critical of the dark paper bundles that have been coming out. You can't see the
cigars,
right? So let me pull up this picture here. I have a big screenshot, and this is really attractive packaging when I looked at this.
I mean, I like the band too. I like that is nice.
Look at that. He made cello packaging look nice. He puts that paper wrapper under it, right?
That's a good idea, the paper wrapper.
Yeah. And what I like is I can see the cigar.
Yeah.
I can see the cigar, I can see the band. I hate the dark. I've been very critical of all these companies doing the dark paper Mazos because you can't see them. And look, a retailer can put these on the shelf and easily kind of, you know, have these bundles available. So I think he did a really good job here.
Well, for the same price, I was saying this to Coop too, because I really like the bands. And that idea of like having that consistent camo throughout, I think is a really cool idea.
Yeah.
Is that if you were at a, if it's the same price as like some naked factory second, like you're going to pick this up before that.
Yeah.
Not knowing anything about cigars. Cause it just looks, it just looks better. So you definitely reach for this in a shop.
I think, and like I said, these sell in 15 count bundles. So these bundles probably go for about $50 a piece.
Oh.
But you're getting 15 cigars, you know. Not a bad deal. And you got three choices. So, you know, you can mix and match these as well.
I'd be interested in the blue and stuff, because the one thing about it, which I think is like you said, like it's not a strong cigar. It's sort of the market really likes those, I guess, heavier cigars that have a bit more of a punch. So there's not much of a punch to the cigar itself. I mean, it's good flavor and stuff, but it doesn't have that punch, I guess.
No, and even the pepper I got at the beginning wasn't a blast of pepper.
No, and it's gone quick, too, I think, for me anyway.
Yeah. The one thing I'll say last about, for people again who may not be familiar with Fratello watching the show, if you look, they have these zigzag bands. And that's a staple of, and I'll kind of show mine here, that's a staple of Fratello. That's his signature band. And he's done different iterations of this with his lines over the years.
I love it. And you know what I love, Coop? This is my, since we're having beef about packaging, this is my beef about bands. You know what I love that he does? He puts his name on the band.
Yeah.
It's not some piece of ribbon or something.
Right.
You don't know what it is.
You know, I pick on Soccer a lot, right? Soccer came out with that unicorn cigar. This cigar sells for $100, right? He's got a nylon ribbon on that cigar.
Yep.
Like, Steve, I would have paid $105 if you have a nice band on that. At that point, the cigar's $100. But he has that. I hate that nylon band he put on it.
I just don't like bands that don't tell you who made the cigar.
No, I mean, I know Crown Head uses them on some of their releases, and I understand.
Yeah.
But at least with Crown Heads, they've done different colors, and you can figure, like, Yellow Rose, Tennessee Orange, the Hawaii Blue. So it makes some sense what they've done with that. So I can live with that. Red, the Buckeye Land with Ohio State.
Yeah. But like the Skull and Bones say, the Viajes, like you have no idea what cigar is what, because like you got eight cigars that all have a white Skull and Bones on it. And you have like no idea what you're getting.
Yeah. A little bit of a goose ash I'm getting on here, but not terrible.
Oh, yeah.
It's not. It's combusting fine, this cigar.
Oh, yeah. But we'll be interested to see what you think.
Yep.
In a bit of time.
Absolutely.
Some things I wanted to mention is be sure to email us, cigarjukebox@gmail.com, or email Coop. What's your email, Coop?
Coop@cigar-coop.com.
And then we got, I just wanted to mention the website again, cigarjukebox.com, putting up some new music. I made a late new music change today of a song I just put up a review for yesterday. So,
yeah, I mean, you got the Springsteen one up really quick, which was really good. That was good. A really good review.
I like that.
I knew the second I heard it, you were going to like be on it. And then the review came out the next day. I liked, you had the Harry Belafonte out there as well.
That's right.
Yeah, so.
Harry, man.
Harry,
So, yeah, check it out. Let me know what you think. It's just something that we're adding to the show. Coop and I will post stuff, sort of add to the show, stuff we can't really cover.
Yep.
Or have time to cover on the show.
Exactly. And you can always find these shows. Now we'll have these shows published on here as well.
Yep. Smoke-In Cigar Sampler, is that still done? What's the update on that? Is that still going?
If you're watching this on Monday, it's the final week. If you might say Monday, 28th, we won't win. There's been it's right now between this guy Dojo and Cigar Prop. If you're listening to this, buy the Dojo sampler.
We want. Whoa, Dojo!
We're rooting for Dojo to win this thing. So, as much as I want Aaron's got a lot of ground to make up. But if I have to fall to fifth place, then I'm glad Aaron will take fourth. I'm at 11%. Aaron's at 7%. It's the guy leading is this guy Cigar Prop at 29%, and Dojo's at 26%.
Oh, so he's close.
Yeah. He's close. He's close. Yeah, the other guy, he did some questionable incentives to people. I'll just leave it at that. Dojo kind of did more of a traditional giveaway. Coop didn't do any giveaways. I actually want to put this out there to see how it would do. I mean, the spirit of the contest, Dave, was put together the best sampler.
Yeah.
Not put together a crazy marketing plan.
Well, I think that's right.
That's what this was for.
Well, Dojo's, I mean, I have to say, all the samplers look pretty good. I mean, Dojo's.
They all are good. Even the guy who was doing prop, the guy who was in first place, who I'm rooting against with Dojo, he put together a good sample. He got it around a $40 price point. He did a good job with the sampler. So, and I'll say this, he also did a good job of connecting with his audience, the cigar prop guy. You got to give him credit. He's in first place, and I might not like the way the contest went, but that doesn't mean I don't have guys did a good job with it, too, so I want to say that.
Yeah. Well, hey, get out there. Get your samplers, everybody.
After the contest, there's going to be some Coop incentives I'm going to have. So there'll be stuff I'm going to do after the contest, some giveaway stuff with packs and shirts. And then, Dave, your next package will have a pack. I put one aside for you.
Oh, I might get it in 2021.
Right.
It'll be exciting. It's
in a humidified pouch, so it should stay good. Yeah.
No, I mean, yours is, I mean, all of them are very good. I mean, you have the Cien Años Maduro, so that, you know, God, in and of itself.
Cigarred a decade. I mean, yeah. It's interesting to see how people buy stuff with this. And I think a lot has to do with, you know, connecting with people. I think when you have a big community, it helps. So, but you know, I've told people, I've said this 100 times, if you already bought my sample, buy one of the other guys' samplers. Like I said, I knew we weren't going to win, but I wanted to get back up to about 13-14%. So we'll see what happens before. Abe's going to take down the standings the day this show airs. So the last week, no one's going to know where the standings are. And I think that will make it more interesting, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great idea.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, yeah.
Do you think they'll do it again?
I think Abe will definitely do it again. I think he'll change some of the rules, though, next year.
Yeah. I mean, do you know – and this is sort of, I don't know if you know this, but do you know, has it like increased sales for him? Like, has he seen more traffic come through since it started?
There were definitely points where there were boosts of traffic. One thing, and I'll be very honest, I didn't like this, right? There was a discount code put in on Labor Day, right? And now everyone likes the discount code, right? The problem is people bought during that discount code period, and then after the sales stalled. Right. So I'm not a big fan of discount codes. I don't put discount codes on Coop because we have other retailers, and this was a site-wide discount they had. And I want to be fair to the other retailers because I don't want to undercut anyone who has who's a retail sponsor. So the Coop policy is we don't put the codes up on there, but it was out there. I mean, well, I wasn't going to if people asked me if there's a code out there, I said, yeah, you know, here's where you can find it. But we don't put it physically on the site for that reason.
No, it's a good idea. So, get some samplers.
Yeah, get it.
Now, Coop, we've been away for a while, so now we're into the – we had a couple major music people pass away recently.
Yeah. So I'll let you do the first one because you're a little more familiar with him than I was.
Yeah, the next one, that's pretty recent, your one. I didn't even know that one until
that just happened, a week ago, yeah.
But Toots Hibbert, who is one of the founding members of Toots and the Maytals, which people may know, reggae luminaries. I mean, they've played and toured from the 60s all up until, like, 2 years ago he was touring. So, and they've been around forever. It's one of those bands that sort of has members come and go. Toots was a founding member, has been there the whole time, I believe. It's an iconic band. Iconic. We did soundtracks, and we did the Harder They Come soundtrack, and they're on there. They've inspired people like Bob Marley, and I mean, they're playing with people like Desmond Dekker. And like they were like, really, really founding members of reggae in general, let alone just iconic. They were almost like a founding member of reggae. And he passed away. I think he was in his 70s, I believe. But it's interesting to see their career and how he's putting music out in like 4 or 5 different decades. It's pretty crazy. So the two tracks I chose to sort of honor Toots is sort of kind of most well-known. Pressure Drop, I put on there. He's done that song, a number of different variations of that song. And it's probably the most well-known song of Toots and the Maytals is Pressure Drop. And he did Country Road, the John Denver track, but made it reggae. It is phenomenal. I love it. So it's a fun band. I mean, in terms of reggae, they just put a lot of fun in the reggae, and they're great. They're a great band. So there you go. So my celebration of Toots Hibbert, who passed away, I think, beginning of September.
Yeah, and he did cast away of COVID. That was confirmed.
He was leading up to his death. He was in ICU for a fair bit, I think.
Yeah, he was. They put him into a medically induced coma for a while. He was 77 years old. By no means young, but no, by no means old either these days when you look at that.
Yeah.
He had a lot of ska influence with his work too. You know, we didn't really talk about him on the ska show, but he did have a lot of ska influence as well.
Yeah, Toots, man. Yeah, now this one I didn't know until I saw the notes for the show.
Yeah.
And I looked into this. So go ahead, Coop.
I was shocked that this one didn't get more airplay on it. Just kind of, but Ronald Bell. And people may not know who Ronald Bell is, but he's the co-founder of Kool and the Gang with his brother Robert. And Robert was Kool. Robert was a guy called Kool. Ronald Bell was kind of a little more in the background. He was a saxophone player. But he was instrumental a lot in the songwriting and the production. And when I tell you he was on some of the biggest hits. I mean, behind, you know, writing these biggest hits, Celebration, Cherish, Jungle Boogie, Summer Madness, Open Sesame, Joanna. Ronald just wasn't the guy who was known because of his brother, Kool. And then when JT Taylor came in the 80s, JT Taylor essentially became the face of that band as the lead vocalist. So this is a big loss. Kool and the Gang, they're a band that's been around for over 50 years. They've been around a long time. People don't realize that. I picked Hollywood Swinging. I just love that song.
No, that's a great album. The Wild and Peaceful record from 1973. That's got Jungle Boogie on it, I think, as well. That's a great record.
I think you're right. You know, and you look at back then, Kool and the Gang was more of a funk band. Really, when you look at them, their roots are on the funk end of things. They became more of a top 40 band in the 80s, especially after JT came in there. And yep. Jungle Boogie is on that one. Good call, Dave.
They had a bit of – did they go through a bit of disco as well, or were they mainly just funkin' and
no,
pop?
They definitely went through some disco on that. You know, Open Sesame was on the Saturday Night Fever album as a good example of that. So they were very versatile. They became more of an adult contemporary band in the 80s when songs like Cherish and Fresh, that was the Emergency album that came out. So they kind of changed at that point.
They were also one of those bands that had the Quentin Tarantino bounce when Jungle Boogie was in the Pulp Fiction soundtrack. It was a classic Tarantino finds a deep track of some band. And then, like, you know, 40 years after its release, it goes top 10 again.
Yeah. No, you're right. And, you know, it's funny. Hollywood Swinging's at the end of it's the closing credits of the Be Cool movie.
Oh, yep.
Which is really good as well. And, oh, by the way, I'm moving out another big song that Ronald Bell wrote was Ladies' Night.
Oh, yeah.
You want it again. You look at a song that's stood the test of time, yeah.
But, no, great band. Good. Thanks for bringing that bringing Ronald Bell up, Coop, because I would have missed it otherwise.
Yeah, like I said, that he wasn't as well known, but that's a big loss. You know, I know Kool and the Gang isn't what they, you know, they kind of are in the later part of their career, certainly, but nonetheless, you know, I don't know how much Kool and the Gang actually performs anymore, to be honest with you. That's something I didn't check.
Iconic band, though. Like, I mean, I think everybody's got their favorite Kool and the Gang tracks. Like, they span such a large period of time and so many different genres that, yeah, they're quite influential.
He wasn't that old either. He was 68.
66, yeah.
68. He wasn't that old.
No, which is also surprising to me.
Yeah, they
must have started quite young.
Well, he did. I mean, they started in the late 60s.
He must have been a kid when they started out then.
His brother was the older guy. I don't know how old his brother. His brother's 69, so his brother's not much older. So that's a big, like I said, big, big. Yeah, we don't talk about Kool and the Gang as much on this show.
No, we should.
We really good. Should. I agree. Then, well, I'm sure we'll talk more about this when we do our the tribute show early next year.
Oh yeah, I gotta start putting that together.
Yeah, we got.
Should we get into it, Coop? Live music, get rock out.
Yeah. So I guess you're gonna talk about live music. And I'm pretty excited about this show. Again, this was another fun. All these shows have been fun to put together, and this certainly was another good one to do on this. So I'm kind of excited about this.
We were talking before too. This is gonna be like the metal show. I think you could do 8 different live music shows.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, we were supposed to do the metal show tonight. We just couldn't get everyone scheduled. So we want to make sure we get the whole crew back together. So we will have that metal show coming up.
Yeah, but we could do a number of different live.
Yeah. And Dave and I, when we get into the tracks, we took an approach. We kind of evolved a different approach. And we'll probably change the approach up from show to show when we do these live ones.
So first off, well, before that, I want to do a cigar check and see how you're at. How's it going?
Very good. Combustion's still good. Not as much. The flaking actually still went away. I'm getting kind of a definite sweetness off this. There's definitely a woody note I'm getting. It's a pretty strong woody note and kind of a little bit of cedar and a little bit of pepper. It's not changing up that much. It's kind of been doing that since I got into it. The pepper did die back a little compared to the beginning. Enjoyable cigar. I put it probably, like I said, solid medium strength, medium body right now.
Yeah, I'm probably nearing the middle of the second third, maybe. I'm about that far.
Yep.
The ash and stuff is a bit flaky. I mean, which you'd expect. I think as I was smoking it and thinking about it, it started off well, and I think like the same notes continued for me, like the sweetness and stuff. But as the cigar progresses, they just get a bit more washed out.
Yeah, I'm like, a little behind you probably on mine.
Like it just like you're still getting the same notes, and it's still enjoyable, but it's just getting a bit washed out, like a bit diluted, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not at that point yet, but I, you know, with a lot of short filler cigars, I'll see that happen.
But I'm not tossing it. Like, it's still enjoyable.
No, I mean, there's cigars I know, like, Stogie Santa would have chucked before this one. So, yeah, I don't think this is a chuckable cigar. I mean, I think it's something worth smoking and giving, definitely giving this a smoke.
It's not harsh or bitter. It's just washed out. It's just a bit diluted.
You're not going to get an exotic profile off this season.
No. So, but it's good, though.
If you're looking for, like, wintergreen notes or, you know, black cherry, you're not going to get – it's not going to be the cigar.
But you're sitting outside talking music. Why not?
Why not? Yeah, exactly.
So, Coop, I just wanted to get – so like we started out, live records and live recordings is such a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kick us off, just your general thoughts around live records, your experience with them?
Yeah. I think every artist should have a live album. I think it's important because a studio track's going to sound different than a live track because of the way the studio track is put together in terms of tracks and layers, right? Well, the live music's actually everyone's playing at the same time. A studio song's often put together in layers, right? So
yeah,
it's kind of put together, And it gives you, when you get a live album, you get a whole different sound in a lot of ways with that. Maybe the same song. And in some ways, you might like it better. Or in some ways, you may not prefer it to the studio track. I tend to see live artists do live albums. We're not really going to focus on albums as much this time, right?
Yeah.
The albums are two ways. They either have a live album on a concert, or it's a compilation of various live tracks.
Yeah.
From the experience, I prefer the live, the singular one. But, you know, you can look at it. You get some good compilations with that as well. It's really cool when you actually are at the concert that's on the live album.
I have
an example of that one, which is really cool to have. Actually, two I have. From a personal standpoint, I loved going to concerts. I went to probably over 100 concerts in my life. I say loved. I had to stop going to concerts when I got the blood infection, and that was just because I kind of there's still questions how I got this blood infection, if my immunity is at risk. So unfortunately, I haven't, and this is pre-COVID. This was pre-COVID but live, there's enough live music out there where I could still enjoy YouTube and album cuts. So for me, it doesn't mean I don't like going to a concert anymore. It's just I had to get to, maybe someday I'll feel more confident again. I'll miss it greatly. But, you know, here's the other thing that's coming, Dave, though. And this is something that may get me back to concerts. The drive-in concert concept is starting to pick up in the U.S. And that's something like, wow, that's pretty cool. And, you know, you go, it's like a drive-in movie, and you go and you tune it in on your radio. And from what I've heard, some people are telling me this is a very good experience because, you know, again, you could get the stuff through your speakers at times with this as well. So, I think this may be something that changes concerts right now. You'll start to see these drive-in concerts.
Yeah. No, it's a –
yeah.
It's interesting. I love live music. I love a good live track.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love it. I mean, like Coop said, there's a variety of different ways you can. We're focusing on one thing today, but, you know, a live track can be a good B-side to a single. Sometimes, like in the days of singles, you get a single, and the live track might be a good B-side. I mean, some like way back in the time of 45, some people might put out a live 45. With just a couple tracks from like a show. You got radio station recordings, which we're not going to get into. I guess the famous ones are like the BBC Peel sessions.
Yeah.
Famous.
Yeah.
Famous here in America, like different radio stations, like NPR does, some of their radio stations do like live recordings where they come in studio and they'll play something. They have NPR All Songs Considered, which is a podcast I've talked about, do something called Tiny Desk Concerts, where someone will come into the studio, like, you know, like Taylor Swift they had once, and they have other people. And she'll do like three or four songs in the studio, and they'll put that out on YouTube or as a podcast. Bootlegs, which we can't really feature here because they're bootlegs, so you can't get the song on. But I guess that's like the original live recording where you get some bootleg record from like 77 that someone recorded, you know, the sound guy recorded off the soundboard and then like pressed it or something.
Used to buy those on campus.
Oh, I loved it.
They come and have the cassettes.
Yeah.
You buy those bootleg, yeah.
I got, and those are my, that my first introduction to live music was buying bootlegs of Led Zeppelin, Live at Blueberry Hill, Texas Pop 68, Monterey in 69, buying cassettes of bootlegs like from fan sites and stuff was sort of my first experience. And I guess, yeah, I mean, I guess I just love, I love live music, and I love listening to it.
Yeah, you know, the bootlegs, my first bootlegs I bought was some Prince bootlegs.
Oh, well, and the interesting thing about live music, like when we had Rick on from Cheap Trick, is like some bands, their most famous album's a live record.
Well, yeah.
Like Live at Budokan is their most, you know.
Yeah, Peter Frampton, Frampton Comes Alive, is a very famous album, live album.
I mean, most of the live records you get now from concerts, it's sort of like you said, Coop, like it might be like live at the, you know, live at the Forum or something, but it's like two nights compressed into, I mean, like, yeah. I guess the most famous one now is when Beyonce did her Homecoming, which is her Coachella show, which was all, was a record and a movie, but that's two nights. So they'll like condense two nights, the best tracks off of two nights into a record. Yeah.
You know, if you're a Springsteen fan,
ooh,
in the States, you don't have access to this probably. Sirius XM, the E Street Radio channel, is Bruce's channel. And there is a Springsteen concert on twice a day. And they have, I mean, you get a different concert every day. And what they usually do is it's the date, like, so if today is September 26th, we're recording this, they'll find a concert from September 26th of Bruce Springsteen and play that concert. And you get it in its entirety. Some
nice.
Of the quality is not as good as, and they're honest with us. They yeah. say some of the quality is not as good as the others, but that's a great, I love how they program the E Street Radio channel. It's the best single artist channel out there. Because they get Bruce's live element is so important that, you know, he can't come out with 100 of these albums either.
Well,
this is a great way to get his concerts, you know, and get a Bruce concert every day.
Well, yeah. I mean, he has so many great concerts. He put out a box set that was like best live recordings from like,
that was a five,
75 to.
Yeah. I remember that. That's right.
That came out a while ago.
That was right. I think that came out before Tunnel of Love and after Born in the USA.
Yeah. Like 85 maybe.
I think it was like
maybe
85.
It goes up to 85.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Bruce later in the show, but that's a good, and so what makes a good live record?
Yep.
So for me, there's like kind of a couple key things. One is audio quality, which you've touched on. There is varying sorts of audio quality.
Yes.
Where the mix will be like either too much crowd in the mix and you don't get enough of the singer, or conversely, there's no crowd in the mix and you miss that sort of live element. So audio quality's been hit and miss. I guess if you're getting a released record, usually the audio quality is pretty good. So if you get a live record that's being produced, you know, like the Bruce Springsteen box set, usually the audio quality is pretty good because they would have gone over it. Like I know in my bootleg days, y'all, I'm always looking for stuff that was recorded off the soundboard.
Yes.
Because then you're like, oh yeah.
Then you're getting that, yeah. But yeah, I remember, you know, yeah, the recording techniques have gotten infinitely better. So, they're, you know, now they can kind of plan this out much more.
Or they'll go over it, you know, or they'll, like you said, like they'll know ahead of time they're making a live record out of it. So they'll really get it all set up.
I mean, one other thing, we talked about this when we did the Live Aid show. The Live Aid recording was atrocious. The audio was atrocious for that. But when they did Live 8, different story. I think they had that one more planned out.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool covers is another good one. You get some cool covers on some live ones. You got, like, Led Zeppelin covers some Elvis and a couple of their tracks. Aretha covers both the band and B.B. King on a live record of hers, which is very good.
Yeah.
So it's cool to get good guest stars sometimes.
Yeah.
We're gonna I don't know if it was if it was Live A or Live A where Mick Jagger was solo and then Tina Turner came out for a track or two.
Live Aid.
Yep. So that, I mean, that's a good example. Like you get a good, like you get, you know, Bowie singing with somebody, or like we talked about, you had Keith Richards and like Bob Dylan and stuff doing a song together.
Coldplay and Richard Ashcroft. Yeah.
Yeah. So you get those cool guest stars. Coldplay also did one with Oasis with one of the Gallagher boys.
Yeah.
Came out and did one. But so you get some cool ones. And I guess the last thing I like in a live record is you get different versions of like the songs that you really love. So they either slow it down, speed it up.
Yep.
you get a different vibe, which is always cool.
Yeah, no, I agree with that as well.
You get the acoustic set. Every band has the acoustic set where they come out and do a couple acoustic tracks.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing to do right now. It's kind of an easy way to kind of get a live thing out there, especially if you're doing those, like you mentioned, being in the radio station, you want to just do something right live. An acoustic way is an easy way to do it.
Well, MTV Unplugged, I mean, that's a whole series. You know,
that was huge. That was such a great concept. I wish it was still around. The Bryan Adams Unplugged is the one I just still am blown away from this day.
Nirvana Unplugged is iconic.
Yeah. Normally, I will say an Unplugged is not an example. It's not going to substitute the regular experience. The ones we just mentioned, those two, are a different story. That's Unplugged to another level, and I agree on both. Yeah, with that one.
And that was a huge,
yeah,
a huge thing. I mean, what for you, Coop, makes a good, I had a live record?
I had a lot of the same points you did, but I have a couple of other points to kind of tack on that. So, like I said, the quality a lot of time is inferior, but it's improving. Now, the other thing is with the advent of video, VHS, DVD, Blu-ray, now streaming, you will get better, material. You'll get a better concert, right? You can get the concert as it is, as opposed to chopped up into tracks, which I like.
Yeah.
The problem is with the video recordings, they don't record it the same. They don't record the same way. So the audio is not quite as good as you will get on a pure digital audio recording, but it's still not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to talk about Queen Live in Wembley is a great example. Queen, they did a CD and they did a DVD. The recording of the CD is better quality audio wise, but the DVD is produced so much better. They chop some of the songs up. There's a difference. So what did I end up doing? I ended up buying both.
Well, they got you there.
Right. So I ended up buying both. Yeah. You mentioned the different versions of songs. There's a lot of improvising that you can get along with that. It gives you an opportunity to improvise. You know, when I talk a little about Phish, which I haven't, Phish is a great band that improvises, and they're a live band. They're really a live band.
Well, Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin, you'll see some studio track that's 3.5 minutes. You see the concert, and it's like 27 minutes or something, and you're like, "What?"
Exactly.
It's like you get the record, and one whole side is just a song.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned collaborations and covers. I think you covered that pretty well. I think it's just a great sandbox for both of those types of things.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about Springsteen. He is, especially in the later part of his career, has really leveraged these concepts at his concerts. You know, with the collaborations and covers. So he's done a very good job with that. Finally, what I'll just say is, as someone who went to a lot of concerts, the live album isn't going to be a substitute for the concert experience, but it's going to give you some really good music is what I'm going to tell you. So, I mean, even watching a video is not the same as being in a concert. But like I said, I don't think it's a substitute. I think it's a compliment to it. So, but there's some great music, and we're going to talk about some great music with that.
So what we did is I was putting this together in the notes, and I was finding that I was starting with iconic albums, but what I found was a lot of these albums were all from similar venues. So I said, well, let's do something different, Coop, and we'll just go, instead of albums, we'll just do venues.
Yeah.
And look at the great music that came out of those venues. So we decided to take that focus, and then in future shows. So what's not on here is anything done in a studio, like a BBC Sessions or something.
Right.
As well as your iconic album. So like Talking Heads' Stop Making Sense is an iconic live album, but that won't be on here because we're just looking at venues. That's for future live shows if people like this.
Yeah.
And you can email cigarjukebox@gmail.com and tell us if you like it.
Absolutely.
But because there are venues that are iconic venues that everybody puts out a record from that venue. So why don't you kick us off, Coop, with your top venue here?
Yeah, I have this one first, but I'll just kind of start. It is a big venue in Europe. It's the HCI Arena in Hanover, Germany. So there's a lot of bands that played in Hanover. They go to the HCI. There's a German name. It's like Niedersachsen or something like that. I'm not gonna
I'll take your word for it.
All right, but Germany is a big concert destination. The HCI Arena is certainly something that's a popular place to go there. Maybe it's not as well known here in the state. I'll get to some of the more well known ones in the state, but it was the first one I came up with actually before we kind of went down this venue route too. So I already had this on the list, and I'm like, all right, I'm just going to keep it. The song I'm picking is Invisible Touch by Genesis.
Nice.
It's from a live compilation album called The Way We Walk, Volume 1. And it was so when Genesis went on a 92 tour, which I did go see them on the 92 tour. I just wasn't in Germany. They did these compilation albums where they took their short tracks and their long tracks. And the short tracks were put on The Way We Walk, Volume 1. And the long tracks were put on The Way We Walk, Volume 2. Kind of a creative way to do this. I liked it.
Yeah.
Now, Invisible Touch was a song that came out about 6 years before they went on the concert. It was their only number one hit. It was the first song off the Invisible Touch album. To me, it was like the perfect kickoff a concert song, right?
Mm.
What they did is they kind of tweaked this song a bit and made it the final song of the main set.
All right, okay.
And the song had, with the live feel of it, it suddenly took on a song that was kind of a finale, is the best way to put it. Where, you know, it's just they do a little more at the end. There's a little more instrumental at the end, a little harder drums, a little harder keyboards. This is a great example of doing a rearrangement of a song and kind of putting a whole other spin. And it's a much better – this is actually a much better track live because of the changes they did. But I would recommend listening to this versus listening to the original studio version, and you're going to just see what I'm talking about. It's all I'm just going to say.
Right.
I was a big fan of Invisible Touch. It was a nice song, but man, this live version blows me away. And I remember when I heard it live, I'm like, wow, that was a great way to end the set. You know, and it was just perfect. So that's my first pick. Yep.
Nice. Now, I had to go Dolly Parton. So I went Dolly Parton. Now, this is off of her first live record called A Real Live Dolly. And this is interesting. When you get to the 60s and the 70s, you'll see these iconic bands playing some community center in the middle of nowhere. And you're like, what? And so there are these records people do at these very small venues. And so she did this record at Seaver High School in Tennessee.
Oh, wow.
Which was her alma mater. She went there. And so went and played there. And so you get these like really interesting small, I mean, I think even like the Sex Pistols toured like random community, the Kinks did, like they toured these like random community colleges and civic centers and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. It's first live record. And it's an example of, we were talking about what makes a good live record, a different version of a song that you know. So she did a really stripped back sort of acoustic version of Coat of Many Colors. Very iconic song of hers, but a very stripped back version that is just wraps your attention the whole time. And it's just fantastic. So that's my first one because I got to get Dolly in there.
There you go. So the streak goes to 19 shows in a row.
That's right.
Nice pick. That's a nice pick.
She doesn't have a ton of live records, even though she's played like Grand Ole Opry and like iconic live venues. But she doesn't have a ton of live records. So I thought this was cool. It's sort of her first live record.
Yeah, you know, you say that. I think you're right. I mean, there's a lot of YouTube performances of her out there.
Not a ton of records, though.
Not a ton of records. And that's a difference, yeah. That's a good point.
But you got – your next one is very iconic.
Madison Square Garden.
Mm-hmm.
New York's got several iconic places to play music. I'm going to have another one later. But Madison Square Garden, it's the Mecca. It's an arena that I like because it's got good acoustics.
Okay.
So a lot of arenas, like there may be very nice arenas around the country, nicer than Madison Square Garden. The acoustics quite aren't the same. You get really good acoustics at a Madison Square Garden, so it's a great place to see a concert. In 2000, I went with my daughter, who was 7 years old. I took her to the Bruce Springsteen concert.
Ooh, nice.
Now, he had just gotten back together with the E Street Band.
So he
just put back – so this was very exciting for me to go see. And the song I picked was Out on the Street. Which to me, that performance is great. It's such a great live song, and there's energy, and Bruce brings an element to get so many people involved with the song. Like he was, as he's singing this song, I remember he goes and kisses this old lady in the front row.
Nice.
Right. I mean, it's just, and then at the end of this, and this is where the live track really shines. At the end of the song, he's on stage. Several members of the E Street Band are on stage, and they start doing this like they alternate the microphone. So Bruce will say, "Meet me out on the street," and then the E Street will respond back, "Meet me out on the street," and then he gives each one a solo, right? You know, where Bruce sings it, and then one of the people goes solo with it. And everyone remembers the clarence, the deep clarence comes in and goes, "Maybe out on the street." Yeah, it's like, but I was at that concert, and he releases live in New York City, and it was the same track and that track from that date, and I'm like, wow. And the video also, because I remember everything to a T. He did do several, but I know it was the same night I was there when they recorded it. So
love it.
Yeah. So it has, when you're at there, it has an extra special feel where, you know, you have this CD and it's captured and it's in the highest quality form. And I can pick a whole bunch of tracks off that one, but that's my favorite.
Nice.
Yep.
Yeah, that's gotta be cool to listen to a show and like been at the show. I haven't had that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I have, one other that I'm going to get to. Yeah. On here.
I have Bruce in this next one.
Yeah.
So this is a very iconic venue, and that's Winterland. It was in San Francisco, closed down in 78, the end of 79. And famous venue in San Francisco. Everybody in the 60s and 70s played there. It was sort of the center of rock and roll and flower child movement.
Yeah.
You have a story about it, Coop? I have in the notes.
No, I just put a little note in here about there's so many, like, San Francisco's got a lot of venues. There's a place called Bimbo's, which I had to mention. It's kind of like one of these clubs that everyone will come through and play. Great place to go see some concerts there. And I haven't seen a big name concert there. I saw kind of some house bands when I was there.
Yeah.
But a lot of names have gone through Bimbo's as well. But San Francisco is a big part of the rock scene. Don't let anything, don't let anyone fool you on that. It really is.
There's another San Francisco venue we will talk about later. But, I mean, I think LA is more well known because they have the whiskey and stuff.
Bimbo's like the Troubadour. It's kind of the same thing. Yeah.
So they got famous concert now. With Jimi Hendrix, I picked a track of Voodoo Child off of his Winterland record because he did Winterland in 68.
Yeah.
Now, the next two songs are from one concert. So Winterland closed, and they played a concert from New Year's Eve, 1978, to New Year's Day, 1979. And then the whole audience had, like, breakfast afterwards. It was an eight-hour concert. And the Grateful Dead played for 6 hours.
In the
concert. So it's off of their iconic. So one of their Grateful Dead has a ton of live records, but one of their iconic live records is called The Closing of Winterland. And it closed New Year's Eve 78 into like New Year's Day 79. And they played for 6 hours. And so I got St. Stephen is the track I chose off of that. And the, another person that played the Winterland on that same concert was Bruce Springsteen. So he did Fire. And you could find that track. He didn't have a Winterland album, but like we talked about, he did a box set of live recordings. And you could find that Fire track off of that box set.
Oh, yeah. That, I know that track. I didn't realize that's where it came from.
So that's that Winterland track. So they would have opened, because I think Grateful Dead played the final 6 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. And there's another band that played that. That same concert. I can't remember who they were, but yeah, so it's a pretty iconic final show in a very iconic venue, Winterland in San Francisco.
Yeah, I just, I'm looking at that. Yep, it's Fire was on side too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you love Bruce Springsteen, that's a great box set to get, that live recordings one. There's some great, there's Thunder Road on there. That's very good. It's a very good album.
Yeah, but that Fire one is very, that was a very popular, I think that got released to radio actually.
Yeah, and that was off of that that final concert in 78, which for Bruce would have been pretty early in his career. It would have been
about 4 years, 3 or 4 years into his career, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, after you know, Born to Run, obviously, but kind of before, I mean, it was a good 5-6 years before Born in the USA, but it was, yeah.
I'm just looking, I just pulled up the track listing for, it's the Live 1975 to 85 set, which we've mentioned a couple times tonight. That's the 5-album set.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because the tracks are pulled either from New York or New Jersey or California.
Yep.
Yeah, there's like a temp. There's one from like Tempe, Arizona, mixed in it, but everything else is L.A., San Francisco, Hollywood, Nassau Coliseum, Meadowlands. It's very interesting. Roxy Theater.
I think at the time, you could probably get better stage crews for those like bigger coast shows.
Yeah, and again, it may have something to do with the acoustics as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think, like I said, plays a big part in that.
But you got a very iconic. We go from Winterland to Across the Pond.
Coop. Yeah, I actually picked two artists from here. This was something I might have updated late. But look, I'm not a big stadium guy when it comes to concerts by any
means. Hard to get acoustics.
Hard to get acoustics. But sometimes there's intangibles, okay? Mm-hmm. And you do go to them. Now, if there was a stadium concert I would go to, it would be Wembley Stadium in England. There's just something about that stadium. It's historic. There's been some epic concerts there. It's just an epic. They've actually rebuilt it. So it's like new Wembley Stadium today.
Yes.
Both of these come from the old one, right? But there have been some legendary concerts at Wembley Stadium. The first one I had to pick was In Excess.
Oh, yeah.
Live Baby Live was the album. I believe most of that was from a single night.
Okay.
That show pulled, right? Mm-hmm. There were a couple of tracks I think left off on there, but the track I picked is The Stairs. That's from the X album. It was done live on Live Baby Live was the concert was done in support of the X album. The Stairs is a very emotional song. It's got some really powerful vocals by Hutchins, and it's very prophetic because if you listen to the lyrics, there are references when he says there are reasons to give your life, he says the nature of tragedy is chained around your neck. There's some real prophetic stuff in that. And this was 7 years before he died. But when you listen to it, it's a little, but it's a great song, The Stairs. Live Baby Live is an incredible, I could probably pick 10 tracks off that album. And then I mentioned this album earlier, the Live at Wembley Stadium album by Queen. So everyone knows of the Live Aid performance by Queen, that 20 minutes one, right? That was a Queen set compressed into 20 minutes. Now give them a full show at Wembley, which they did a year after. Yeah. Those are the final Queen concerts with Freddie, by the way. The DVD is better, but man, there's a couple of great tracks. A Kind of Magic. It's not as maybe as well known a song. great, just great live version of that song. There's more energy in that. And then Hammer to Fall is the guitar riffs. You see this on the video. There's a little bit of a guitar duel between Brian May and Spike Edney, who's the
okay.
And it's really, if you kind of watch the guitar duel on the video, when you listen to it on the CD, you're like, wow. And then finally, there's a point where Brian May and Spike Edney, they're jamming, right? Spike just, Brian, take over. And he kind of goes to the back. And he just, like, Brian just goes wailing into the solo at that point. Just fantastic. So, like I said, those are just two iconic concerts. But those tracks are some of my favorites that I just mentioned at Wembley.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Iconic. Iconic venue.
Yep.
The next venue that I have is one that Coop has been to that I have not. So this is more modern.
I haven't heard a concert there, but I have been there. Yes.
No, but he has been there.
Yeah.
This is more of a modern venue. So a lot of the venues, the iconic venues, the story, we're looking at shows from the 70s and stuff. This is more of a modern venue, and it's Red Rocks in Colorado. Natural venue, iconic venue. I think Pearl Jam's played there. A bunch of people have played there and done records there. Another group, band that has tons of live records is Pearl Jam, who I will mention at the end of the show.
Okay.
But two ones I picked from Red Rocks is you got to go U2 with Under a Blood Red Sky. So that was Red Rocks show. And it's an iconic live album of theirs and just in general. It's an amazing record. Amazing cover on that record as well. The track I chose is Gloria, which I think is like the opening track on the record. And because he does a classic concert thing where I think the Edge is playing a solo or something.
Yeah.
And he's introducing members of the band. And then he's like, woo, Red Rocks. And then the crowd just goes crazy, which is that's a concert thing. You got to mention where you're at. And then everybody goes crazy. So he does that in that song, talks about Red Rocks. And then Dave Matthews' band put on a whole record, Live at Red Rocks, which is a double record. So I don't know how many dates that was, but it's at least two dates. I don't know how many, but that's a Live at Red Rocks record, which is a pretty iconic record of theirs as well. It came out, I would say, the mid to late 90s, probably. The track I chose is All Along the Watchtower, which is a cover Dave would do in a lot of shows.
He did, yeah.
And I love a good cover at a show. So I put that on there. Is this you at Red Rocks?
That's a picture of Red Rocks. That's the amphitheater. I was in an empty amphitheater working on my laptop there. And that's the venue down below.
Yeah, iconic venue. Yeah.
I mean, there's something I've listened to both of those live tracks, and man, I just would have loved to have seen it there.
Yeah.
I mean, those are, you know, especially that U2, that Under a Red Rocks Sky, that's just a.
Oh.
I mean, I think that was the album that wanted me to go to Red Rocks. So, and you know, I got my wish to go to Red Rocks in January. I was there before COVID started. And I spent a good part of the day there.
Like I say, I mean, Red Rocks is probably one of the most iconic modern day venues. Now that Winterland's closed and CBGB's have closed and all that sort of thing. So I would say, you know, other than stadium shows, Red Rocks is probably the most well-known venue.
Yeah, you know, I'll pull the picture back up one more time. When I showed that, it's not the most comfortable place to go see a concert.
No,
right?
No.
Right, you look at those. That's wooden. Those are wooden.
Look at that.
Yeah. But you're probably standing for the whole concert anyway with that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, there's more rocks around this, which I don't have a picture of in front of me, but there's something about the rocks and the acoustics, from what I understand, that make it really good too. You're in Colorado – take the drive out to Morrison. If you're in Denver, it's like 15 minutes outside the city. There's a museum there. It's great. I smoked a couple cigars. I didn't smoke in the arena area, but I smoked outside. You could kind of really go on a couple of trails, and they're not hard trails to hike. And if you're a music fan, go see the museum. It's pretty cool. They have a whole museum there on it, which if you're music, you got to go there. Yeah. John Denver is obviously memorialized there. Big part of that.
Yep. Now, what's your next one, Coop?
All right. We're going to go back to the U.S. We're going to go. I've been in this arena, but not for a concert.
Right.
But the MGM Grand has become a – yeah. It's a – yeah.
I was just going to say, I love how we've gone from Red Rocks, this national park, to, like, Vegas.
Right, Vegas. So the MGM Grand has some great entertainment facilities. There's a lot of artists that have played in the MGM Grand. I picked the Bee Gees.
Nice.
And I picked their One Night Only album.
Okay.
Which is – so it's more of a single type of experience. I don't remember if the album is – mimics the concert entirely. I don't think it does. I think it's pretty close to it, though. But I picked a unique track from the Bee Gees. I did not pick one of their popular tracks.
Okay.
I picked a song called Our Love Don't Throw It Away. And it was we're in the virtual world right now, but this was recorded in 1998. It was a virtual recording where the Bee Gees are on stage, and they bring in their late brother, Andy Gibb, who they had some pre-recorded video tracks.
Right.
And it's a softer Bee Gees track. It's an emotionally charged Bee Gees track. The video will show Barry Gibb nearly crying, but you don't even need to see the video to tell that apart. And it's a beautiful track. It's just a beautiful track in memory of Andy Gibb, who passed away. But it was, you know, the amazing thing is when you listen to that on the audio recording, you would not know. You would think that they're all in concert together. It was really well produced, and you would not realize that that was set up virtually, that they did that. You know, so One Night Only by the Bee Gees, Our Love Don't Throw It Away. Great venue, the MGM Grand, a beautiful arena to go into. It's got all the green inside of it and everything.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Love that. Love it. Yeah. I am getting two for the price of one on this one because it's hard to separate these, and that's the Fillmore East and the Fillmore West. So we're going back to San Francisco, and there was a venue. There's the Fillmore, which is a very famous venue.
Yeah.
San Francisco. And then there's a promoter by the name of Bill Graham that decided to make, like, sister venues, I guess, in different sides of town, like the East and the West. And he had the Fillmore East and then the Fillmore West. And they were both iconic venues. And it's hard to sort of separate them, so I combine them. And so I have one from the Fillmore East and one from the Fillmore West. And I mean, they're sort of all iconic venues around California. You got the Forum, which Zeppelin's played a lot. You got the Fillmore East, the Fillmore West, and the Fillmore. And I mean, there's just like, California's got tons of amazing venues. But the first one goes out to Seth Big Tuna from Developing Palettes. It's one of his favorite records of all time, and that is Allman Brothers Band.
Oh, yeah.
Live at the Fillmore East. And the track I chose off of that is Statesboro Blues, which is just great. I think it's a song where they introduce him, like the Allman Brothers Band, and they come out. And he loves this record. I think they do like a 20-minute version of a Whipping Post on it, which is amazing.
Wow.
It's a great record. It goes out to Young Tuna. I hope he enjoys this. So that's my Fillmore East side. Now, if you go to the Fillmore West, Aretha Franklin did a record live at the Fillmore West, which is like, I mean, I could listen to just the audio feed of the crowd because it is so awesome. Like, the crowd is yelling stuff at Aretha, like, yeah, woo! And they're just like, it is so good. It's great. So the track I chose off of that, because she has a great byplay with the crowd, and I guess is a live record, this record has a very live energy to it, which I love. And the track is Dr. Feelgood. I mean, as a track, it's a bit, her singing the song is broken up with a lot of interplay from the crowd. So it's not like you can't just sit and listen to the song, but it's a great live recording. And yeah, so she did a whole record from there live at the Fillmore West, and Dr. Feelgood is the one I chose from that.
Good pick.
So I hope Seth is
Seth will be very happy, yeah.
Pleased. Great live band as well, Allman Brothers Band. Like, you listen to any of their live tracks and they're really, really good.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. I totally agree with you on that. You know, and like I said, I didn't pick any Allman Brothers. I feel kind of bad right now. Because the Allman Brothers really built their reputation from being a live band. So, you know, similar to like Dave Matthews to some extent. And
they're the Allman Brothers are one of those rare bands that performs really well live and in studio. I mean, Pearl Jam's like that. Aretha's like that. But you could get those bands that either do one really well, one or the other. Like, their concert stuff is really good, and the studio stuff, you're like, huh? Or their concert stuff is sort of like, ugh. But they do well either in the studio or on stage. It's very good.
Yeah, no, that's true.
You have another band, Coop, that kind of made its name off of the concert scene.
Yeah, you know, and I actually haven't talked enough about this band on the show, and I'm a big fan of the band. It's Phish.
Mm.
So Phish has been famous. Phish is, you know, I like to say Phish took the mantle from the Grateful Dead as far as a jam band went.
Pretty much, yeah.
And so, you know, they're known for their live songs. They're known for the improvisation. They're also known for doing a Halloween concert every year.
Yes.
Where they cover an album. So I happened to, long story short, my kids were starting to get older, and the Phish Halloween concert was going to take place in Atlantic City, New Jersey. So the venue's the Boardwalk Hall.
Yeah.
Okay. Great venue, by the way. It's a great venue. It's a smaller venue, and it's a convention center essentially.
Yeah.
So me and my buddy Phil, we got in the car, and we drove to Atlantic City from Charlotte, right? And we went to the whole weekend of concerts there. So the night before the Halloween concert, we went to the show. Now, the Halloween concert turned out to be Waiting for Columbus, the album they picked, Waiting for Columbus by Little Feat.
All right.
But what they did, and maybe this is why I'm not a fan of teasers, right?
All right.
So the night before, they were the whole night teasing Led Zeppelin.
Oh,
right. So they're doing little bits of whole Lot of Love, right? They're doing Thank You. There's these bits that are going in there, right? And we all thought next night they're doing Led Zeppelin, right? And it was Little Feet. So we all were caught off guard. Not that that was a bad thing, right? I'm just saying, but they were toying with us. But they did cover Ramble On.
Nice.
And they do a fantastic job of covering Ramble On. Really enjoyable. Now, you can get this, and I believe this is on the Spotify. It's on one of the Live Phish albums. And I believe there's a bunch of those live. Phish has made a lot of their concerts available through the Live Phish series, so I believe that is on Spotify. Yeah, and the Ramble On track is on there. So I, if you're a fan of Phish, if you're a fan of Zeppelin, Phish will put their own spin on it. And Trey Anastasio hit some of the Robert Plant vocals. It's really cool.
Did he?
Yeah. But I was at that. But another one where I'm at the concert, so that was a big deal. Made it more special for me.
That concert would have been crazy.
It was, and like I said, the next night there was a little bit of disappointment because everyone was expecting, everyone thought they were doing that to prepare us for a Zeppelin album the next night to cover, which wouldn't, you know, and no one would have thought it would have been Little Feat's Waiting for Columbus. I guess not a bad thing, but they kind of played with us the night before.
Ah, I love it. Excellent. Now, my last one, let me get my notes, is that for some reason, prisons have always been a good venue for live records. Now, I didn't attend any of these concerts, obviously.
Right.
but some bands have some great prison records. And the two that you hear most of are San Quentin and Folsom Prison. Lots of bands have done that. I think Metallica's done San Quentin, I think, in one of their records.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I don't know when that came out, but I think they did a San Quentin record. But the two iconic ones are the ones I'm going to focus on. First one's B.B. King did San Quentin. And the track I chose is The Thrill Is Gone, iconic track. And I think one of the most iconic live records ever was at Folsom Prison, and that's Johnny Cash.
I think that's what really started the whole prison thing in a lot of ways. Like, maybe
so he did that in 68.
Yeah.
And it was like, that's the iconic record. And the record is great because, like, when you listen to the record, occasionally the warden will come on and, like, call out prisoners and stuff. He'll be like, blah, 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 wanted at the visitor center and stuff like that. The track I chose is Cocaine Blues.
Yeah.
And it's a great track. And what's disconcerting about that track is he talks about shooting his woman down and the crowd just goes crazy. And it's like, oh, but you're prisoners. So I don't know if I like it that you're cheering at the, like, shooting someone part. But yeah, so iconic. That is an iconic live record. And it has this series of records that are recorded at prisons as venues. So
yeah. How many Crown Head cigars are named in Cocaine Blues? Juarez,
yeah.
Jericho Hill, Willie Lee is a Vitola, Jack Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the John Huber's made a whole line of think about.
So this, yeah, this is going out to you, John.
Yeah,
Cocaine Blues, my friend.
Yeah, I mean,
great track. That the tracks with June Carter, because he does,
yeah,
San Quentin as well, and you can get an album that's both. And I have on vinyl, I have the Folsom Prison record. I think the San Quentin record too. But you can get both of them on a disc. And the tracks he does with June Carter are great. Like Jackson and stuff. Like, it's great. So that's my final venue is a prison, which I hope none of you attended either of those shows.
Yeah, I can't say I have not attended a concert in a prison. I can't. but is something about it. I don't know if it's the captivity or just kind of.
I don't know, but it was that era. You're right, Coop. That like late '60s, '70s. There are a lot of prison records, and like I said, Metallica does it as well. But there's a lot of prison records, live records. But yeah, you have some more traditional venues.
Yeah, I got two more. Yours. I got two more, and I'm off by one because I miscounted yours, but that's okay.
It's all right.
All right. I wanted to do Diana Ross at Central Park.
Oh.
But so I started going through Spotify. It's not out there, right?
No.
Right. It's not out there. However, I'm going to kind of disclose it, but I had not heard this recording until I started looking for the Diana Ross thing. In my quest, I found Sheryl Crow had performed at Central Park. And there's a concert called Sheryl Crow and Friends Live from Central Park. So it's a Sheryl Crow concert. And she brings in a bunch of guest musicians on there. And it is a fantastic, I mean, I just got to say, it is probably, I like Sheryl Crow a lot. But wow, that was just like, it's just some of her best work. I picked two tracks from this one because I couldn't settle on one. The first one I picked was It Don't Hurt. That's kind of, it's just a really cool song basically about like post breakup. Really, really done well live. I like that song. Took down the paintings from the walls. That one of me you called doll did some real raw stuff in there. I just love it, right? Then another track, which is one of my favorites as well, is a song called The Difficult Kind. And she does that one with Sarah McLachlan.
Right.
And a really good duet they do together, that one. That's a little more vocal intensive, that song. So it's not as much of the background instrumental, but it showcases the vocals of both of them really good. But but Dave, you would like this album because the Chicks are on this album.
Are they?
Yes. They do Strong Enough. They collaborate with her on Strong Enough. Stevie
right.
Nicks comes on for Gold Dust Woman.
Right.
Eric Clapton comes on for White Room. And Keith Richards and Eric Clapton, Sarah McLachlan, Chrissie Hynde are on Tombstone Blues at the end. I think you would like this album. Yeah. So definitely one I would recommend if you're a Sheryl Crow fan. Really good live recording overall as far as that goes. And I think that was a single night recording, but I don't know how complete it is. And the last one I just picked because this was the same scenario as Sheryl Crow. I was trying to find an audio recording of the McCartney Live in Red Square, which is a fantastic performance with Putin in the U.S. I couldn't find that, right? Mm. But I did find, and in particular with that Red Square recording is the way that Paul McCartney does Hey Jude. And he gets the whole audience involved in the song. Mm. Like, he gets the guys singing, the girls singing, and all together. So he gets everyone into it. There is an album called Back in the World, which he does the same thing on. It was recorded in Mexico City at the Palacio de los Deportes, which is like a 20,000-seat arena there. And he does a very similar version of the Hey Jude that he did in Red Square.
All right.
Kind of gets the whole audience involved. It's a really good performance there. And Back in the World is a compilation album of different concerts that McCartney did for his 2002 tour. So,
right.
Yep. So that's what I had. Like I said, there's a lot we didn't talk about tonight, but I guess that's going to be the topics for more. But we tried to focus on venues tonight for the most part.
Well, it's interesting because Central Park, that has Paul Simon's iconic concert.
Paul Simon. The
in like 91.
Let me tell you, when he opened that concert with the obvious child, just fantastic. I mean, that he has the whole band on there, and that just set the stage. That I would probably say the two biggest concerts, nothing against the Sheryl Crow, which is very good. It's Paul Simon and Diana Ross, maybe in that order. I'll be honest, Simon's one is epic. Those are two big, those are concerts. Hundreds of thousands of people were in the park that night.
And he did a lot of Simon Garfunkel stuff off on that record as well.
He did.
That's pretty iconic. Yeah.
Central Park, I have not been to a concert at Central Park in its entirety. I was a part of the Diana Ross one, but it was the rain night, as I told people. Yeah. And I was younger then, so I didn't go back to the second one, unfortunately.
Well, before we get into new music, that was great live music. Mm-hmm. And cigar update.
Yeah, so this cigar definitely has lost its sweetness.
Yeah, oh yeah.
It's now woody, there's some pepper and cedar, but it's kind of gotten boring, I'll be honest with you.
Oh yeah.
Not bad. There's nothing it hasn't gotten harsh yet. I don't know if it'll get harsher towards the end.
Mine's about this far. Now, I have to say near the end here, it's been a bit of an exercise keeping it lit and keeping it going. Probably if I was smoking on my own, I would have like tossed it. But since we're on the show, I've been keeping it going. A lot of the flavors that were really bringing the cigar together in those first two thirds are gone now.
Yeah, it's taking a turn. The sweetness is gone. There's a slight bitterness that's starting to emerge. It's not overpowering bitterness yet. I have really good construction on my cigar. I'll say this. The construction on mine is really good.
Yeah. I mean, I think size-wise, just from hearing you talk about the Toro, I think this might be a thing where the smaller sizes perform better.
Yep.
Possibly. Because I just started getting really that sort of one-note kind of nothingness kind of around here, which is quite well into the cigar. So I think maybe like if you're picking this up in the shop, maybe going the Robusto or the smaller sizes might be a good, just from hearing you talk about the Toro,
Yeah.
Might be a good
Yeah, like
move.
I said, I have the Robustos sitting here, but I haven't. I picked the Toro, so I'll have to see what's going on with that.
But all in all, I mean, I think it's a good cigar. I think it's worth it. I mean, it's hard to say, like, you know, it's not worth $3 or whatever.
Right.
But it's I mean, it's good just to have if you know, had a long day, you want to kick back, you know, out with friends around a fire or something.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you had friends coming over that like cigars or just got into it, you know, you could pick up, you know, what, like 5 of them for $15, spend, $30 or so, get everybody a cigar. It'd be good. Good time.
Exactly.
But I am interested to see how the others perform, especially that Maduro, to see how that performs over time.
Yeah, I am too. Like I said, I would definitely give this another shot. I feel like if I paid $325 for these, I got my money's worth. I don't think I didn't get my money's worth. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's something good to like stock up the humidor with, so you have stuff on hand. And yeah, I mean $325, you might as well get a 5-pack just to check it out.
I think, and see
what you think.
That's where it's a little $15 cigar. I'd say don't pick it up again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have no problem with that.
All right. You want to read us into the new music 45?
Yeah. So, we want to always mention our friends at Cigar Hustler. They have a great retail store in Deltona, Florida, just off of I-4. If you're in the Orlando area, between Orlando and Daytona Beach, they are. Mike and his brother Greg, they do a tremendous job with their store. They have a great selection of cigars, very eclectic boutique selection. But there's something for everybody in that humidor. Of course, they have their own brand, Postani. If you can't get to the store, they have a great online store. They get the stuff out quickly. Now, it's when it gets to Dave in Australia, that's not Hustler's problem, but
it's not their fault. They get it in the mail, man.
They get, and they stand behind that product too. They really do. So they stand behind the product, which I think is good. So yeah, you can check them out at www.cigarhustler.com. And finally, they also have a podcast, the A Cigar Hustlers podcast, which we had Mike on primetime a few weeks ago for a media panel. He did a great job. And then on the Hustlers podcast, they critiqued it.
Oh, did they? I haven't heard that. I just heard the panel. I haven't heard them critique it yet.
Yeah, they have. On their show, they did it. Now, when they actually critique it, they didn't bash us. They actually were positive. Except the other Mike.
Mike.
Well, Mike Palmer was all upset he didn't get invited.
He probably would be.
Yeah, but Mike.
Hilarious.
But yeah, if you saw the primetime show, Mike did a really good job on the panel.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So he really did. You know, they always joke that they're not media. But I'll say this. I think they're media. They do a really good job. And so yeah, check them out. They're good friends, longtime supporters of the Jukebox show here, and we appreciate them.
And that panel show is a great show. If people haven't caught that yet, I love how you guys broke down
episode
the different shows. And oh, it was great. It was cool.
Yeah. So it's episode 154 of Primetime.
And Mike, by the way. Or the shop, they got the new zombies in. So if you're a big zombie fan, I saw you just put a story up about this coupe. The new zombies from Viaje are out.
Yeah,
he's so got those.
I just ordered. I wish I'd known he had them. I didn't see that because I didn't buy them from him. Sorry,
he Mike. Just got them.
Okay, because I just ordered some of the. They have the zombie green, which is the Criollo. The zombie red, which is the Maduro. And then there's this mystery zombie black.
The black, yeah.
Which is something that was released to China a few years ago.
Really?
Yep.
So they had, I mean, he's got all those.
Yeah.
They're very hard to get.
Yeah.
So if you're a big fan of the zombie, I suggest going there and buying them quickly.
Yep.
And he's only selling them in boxes, I believe.
Yep.
And they'll go.
Yeah, they'll go. You don't get a lot of those boxes, but, you know, they'll go.
They'll go.
The and blacks then, are pretty limited. I don't know. Did he get the, I don't know if he got the blacks. I'm going to be
No,
honest.
He's got the blacks.
Oh, if he's got the blacks, you want to get your hands on them if you're a VIA fan. Andre gave me a black a few years ago at the trade show.
No, he's got the blacks. He's got boxes of all of them. I don't know how many he has.
Right.
But he's selling the boxes on the site.
Okay.
Cool boxes, by the way.
Yeah, I bought one of them a few years ago. It's the elongated. They're completely retailer unfriendly, but they are pretty cool.
they are cool. But no, he's got those. So check that out. All right, so I got a couple songs and then an announcement of an album coming out that I couldn't get a song for because they haven't released a single for it yet.
Okay.
I wanted to mention it. So the thing that kicked off doing this live music show was they just released a remaster of a Bob Marley and the Wailers live show from 77 called The Rainbow 1977. It's the Rainbow Room in London, I believe.
Okay.
It was 77. It's an iconic show. For a live record, the audio quality is exceptional. It is stunning audio quality on this record. It just got re-released, like I said, remastered. Some great songs on there. I chose I Shot the Sheriff because it's just a great rendition of that song.
Oh, wow. I love that song.
And the story with this show is that Bob Marley liked to play soccer a lot. And
I didn't know that.
Oh, he loved it. He would play it like in between shows. And he was playing soccer with some French media and like broke his foot. So they had to cancel the rest of the show, the rest of the tour. So this is like the last shows of this tour. And he actually had to cancel some US shows. A lot of people think that he didn't get as big in the U.S. as he could have because he had to cancel these shows.
Right.
But this is one of the last shows, and it was in 77 in London. It's a great record.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I got to check that one out.
So that's my side A.
Okay.
And side B, I have Fleet Foxes with Jara, which I just reviewed on the website.
I saw that. Yeah, I actually went and listened to that after you reviewed that.
So in the vein of Folklore by Taylor Swift, Fleet Foxes just dropped this album. And the Fleet Foxes haven't put out an album in a couple of years, and it's excellent. It is an excellent album. It's got some great folk harmonizing, a good mature sound, some good instrumentation going on. Like 2020's got some good sort of indie, some folky indie records with Fleet Foxes off of their record, The Shore, or Shore, and Folklore. So you got some great kind of folky records out there. And yeah, it was just a surprise record. And it's good to see them putting out music still. So
yeah, after you put that on the side, I went and checked it out. And it was very good.
Good record.
It was a very good record. Yeah.
Now, the one I want to make an announcement on is Aaron... Aaron Nielsen will probably be excited about this. And that is a Pearl Jam MTV Unplugged record that's coming out.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So what happened was Pearl Jam did Unplugged in like 92. Mm-hmm. But the recording was only available for like on Record Store Day for like fans and stuff.
Right.
So it was sort of this like rare... live recording of Pearl Jam, and now they're re-releasing it. So in October, it's going to be remastered and released widely. So it's this, like, I guess Pearl Jam's known for putting out a lot of live records.
Yeah.
And so it's this, like, rare live gem of theirs that's going to be now made widely available. I wanted to feature a song off it, but they haven't put out a single or anything yet for it. So I just wanted to mention that. So that's coming out in October. So be on the lookout for that record. And if they put a single out for it, we'll feature it. But they haven't had a single out yet.
That'll be good, yeah.
Podcast to check out. I'm going to stump for Rivals again.
There you go.
They just finished their three-part series on CSNY. And they have the Neil Young episode and all Neil Young's rivalries within the band, which is fantastic.
Amazing. I actually watched the first part of that. Or listened to the first part of that, I should say. So, yeah,
it's crazy.
I can't wait that. So that's the one on Young they're doing.
Yeah. So they kind of brought Neil Young in to add to like add some substance to the band. And then he sort of outgrew the band because like as the band was going, he was doing like his solo stuff that went really big. And it's very interesting to sort of see them talk about how he's sort of getting really big at the time the band is trying to stay together and kind of fracturing at all seams. And it's just, it's a cool three-part series if you're into CSNY. And they end it with Neil Young, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I gotta, like I said, watch the rest of that. We'll watch, listen to the rest of that part. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Good picks this week, Dave.
Yeah. And apparently what I've learned out of that three-part series is that everyone loves Graham Nash because Graham Nash did not, he didn't have an episode.
Right. Everyone else did. Exactly. Oh yeah. I guess, David Crosby for sure had his issues. Yeah.
So Graham Nash apparently is like a really nice guy that everybody likes because he's fine.
Exactly. All right. So we're winding this episode down. So before we go, well, stay tuned to what episode 20 is going to be. Well, here's the problem. Well, we have the Halloween show scheduled next.
Will they get here?
Well, and our guest. So the guest may have a personal commitment, and depending on the baseball season. We're hoping to get Rob Rasmussen, right? So there's two questions. We could do the show obviously without Rob, but now we have to get you the cigars. So we're gonna have to, we have that, and then we have an album archaeology scheduled in Halloween too, like in October as well.
Yes,
that's Aloysia Franco's Lady Soul. So those will be the two shows. Which order we do them in may depend on if these cigars come, and when we could get Rob. So I think the first thing is we have to make sure your cigars come.
Yes, that's key.
Yeah. So if anyone's listening in purse, please get those cigars to Dave. But Dave, this was a fun show to do. I'm glad we kind of did this one tonight. So I had a lot of fun with this. Like I said, we could probably do live show every year, easily.
Still haven't touched on like the MTV Unplugs, like the studio live records. We haven't touched on, tons of stuff.
Yeah, just like epic concerts that are on there. Tours. There's a lot we could take this with. But yeah, the studio live piece is kind of very intriguing too.
Mm.
BBC Sessions could probably be a whole show as well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But anything else, Dave?
No, that's it. Sign us out, man. It's a great show.
I gotta say one thing before we go. I just had to put the Fratello down. It finally got harsh. Like it finally got harsh. So but it was like I said, for what it is, not bad. I got enough enjoyment out of it. But anyway, that's going to wrap up this late September edition of Primetime Jukebox Into the Annals of History. Like I said, stay tuned for details on episode 20 and 21 coming up. We'll have them on the Cigar Jukebox and Coop sites as well as our social media. But have a great rest of the month, everybody, and we'll see you soon.